thoughtfully, and we'll go to the first agenda item. The agency should be here.
Yes.
And,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the Department of Administrative Services, a report that was requested of the Emergency Board at its last meeting, and I believe Sue Wilson from the Department of Administrative Services is here with the report, as is her new boss. And budget management staff.
Okay, please proceed.
Can you hear me okay? How's that for sound?
Yes, you're clear.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm the director of the Department of Administrative Services. We have a report to deliver to you today on hiring practices associated with the Oregon Youth Authority. The presenter will be Sue Wilson. To my left is Kelly Friels, supervisor of budget management, and Kay Erickson is the analyst. And Kay is going through her first process in this body today, and so Kelly is here to offer some support and answer any questions that she may have some trouble with. So with that indulgence, we'll move forward with Sue giving the report.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sue Wilson. I'm administrator of the Human Resource Services Division at the Department of Administrative Services. I'm here today at the request of the committee and OIA to address some questions that were raised during the October meeting of the Emergency Board. At that meeting, OIA outlined its findings in a report on youth safety and abuse prevention. And because of the work that OIA was doing in response to that report, the committee raised some questions about the transferability of that work to other agencies in state government, and DAS was asked to speak on that issue. I was contacted by OIA after the meeting and given a copy of the report. I've had the opportunity to meet with OIA staff on the strategies that they're undertaking, and I've also talked with some other state agencies about the transferability of those particular strategies. The key elements that we looked at were hiring practices, employee policies, and training. OIA currently does background checks on prospective employees, as do a number of state agencies, and House Bill 2157 in the last session actually expanded that ability for a number of agencies to do background FBI background checks. The OIA report recommends an even more extensive background check and the use of some psychological testing. This testing is used, this type of testing, on a limited number of state agencies in some very specialized situations. The testing that OIA is pursuing is very specific to youth correctional situations. Other agencies have some specific testing, including the Department of Corrections, Department of Motor Vehicles, Division of Motor Vehicles does some psychological testing. Generally speaking, that type of testing is something that's not terribly transferable from one group of employees to another because it is designed specifically for that particular situation that the employees will find themselves in. Most agencies also have employee policies and procedures and training that is unique to their programs. However, we do have a number of very common training mechanisms that we use in state government, and through a variety of forums, both meetings with HR managers and training managers, we share those policies and training programs with each other for use by other agencies. The policies that have been developed by OIA as a part of this process will be shared with other agencies, particularly those who work with vulnerable communities. DAS provides management training across state government, and we will work with OIA and have met with them about the elements of their management training that first we think should be included in their management training and other things that they have put together that we think we can transfer to other agencies in relation to management training. A number of training programs exist in agencies, again, specific to the very vulnerable communities that they're working in, some as long as 12-week training periods for very specific jobs. Our conclusion is that there are elements of the work that OIA is doing that will be of value to other state agencies. We will facilitate those discussions and the use of that. There are other elements, for such as the testing, however, that are by design just absolutely too specialized to be used very heavily across state government. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Seeing none, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, I'm Kelly Friels with Budget Management, and this is a report that you requested at your October meeting, and we are recommending that you acknowledge receipt of the report.
LFO also recommends acknowledging receipt of the report.
Okay. We have a motion to acknowledge receipt. We do.
Second.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you very much. Representative Krupp, will you carry this? Thank you. Oregon Youth Authority. Please start.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Jester, and I am the director of the Oregon Youth Authority. At the October Emergency Board, we were requested by this committee to come back after reviewing the Youth Safety Committee report with the Judiciary Committee, which we did in December. Both the House and Senate Judiciary Committee reviewed that report at that time. We are back before you today to complete the request for an internal investigator and support staff to provide the Youth Authority with the ability to centralize complaints, to have consistent investigation and documentation of those complaints, allow for analysis of patterns and trends that emerge and need identification, to either change policy, procedure, administrative rule, expand training, or identify employees with recurring problems. The Judiciary Committee requested that we come back prior to the 2007 session and report how that process is working. Senator Schrader, during that last emergency board, asked a question about the accountability of staff who had been involved with the direct supervision of Mr. Boyles during his time with the Oregon Youth Authority. At my request, you may recall that in June, we asked Department of Justice to provide an external investigation and review of actions that were taken by Oregon Youth Authority staff to see whether or not any laws had been violated, agency rule policy had been violated, or determine whether those facts might support additional personnel actions over and above that which the authority has already taken. We expect the result of that report from the Department of Justice to come in within the next 2 to 3 months. And the Judiciary Committee also asked that we review those findings with them. So we are before you today to ask for the internal investigator, the support staff, and for the setting up of a toll-free number that would provide open access to both employees, family members, general public about potential inappropriate care for any youth within the Oregon Youth Authority's custody.
Supposed to report.
And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm kind of torn on what to do here in terms of approving this request, and I'll share with you why. I do not have the confidence in the agency at this point in time that hiring an investigator is going to produce us results, and here's why. Is because I think in the past there has been a culture within a mindset within the agency in terms of staff that has led to many of these circumstances where there's a mindset within the agency that basically says, let's try to keep this quiet and sweep it under the rug. Now, I think that the agency's taken some good steps to prevent that from occurring again, but I just wonder if we're not, by approving this request in the manner that we are, if we're not creating an opportunity for the fox to guard the hen house. And that concerns me. I think it is appropriate that we hire individuals, that there need to be individuals brought on board to respond to these requests, respond to these complaints, rather, and investigate them. I think that's clear that needs to occur. I'm just wondering if
if what we're not leading to here is hiring another employee to work within the department that may then be subject to the political pressures within the department to perhaps not pursue some of these circumstances as aggressively as they can. There's a very real concern of mine. I'm wondering if we can't accomplish this in another manner. In other words, using outside people who are not subject to the internal pressures, political pressures of a department. And that's why I'm torn on approving this request. I think it's necessary we go forward with additional personnel to accomplish the investigations. I think they're moving in the right direction. I'm not sure if I'm quite ready to do this.
Would you like to respond?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I absolutely appreciate your comments. First, let me say that part of the request we made of the Outside Review Committee was to look at the culture of the Oregon Youth Authority and make recommendations of how we can ensure, number one, its transparency, and number two, its openness to public for scrutiny. And I believe that the report has given us some direction that you will see in our implementation plan. We have already taken steps to do that. We are currently the only public safety agency in state government that does not have the capacity that you address in terms of the internal investigator. In regards to the external oversight of the agency, I believe that that exists. I believe that we have taken very appropriate measures to make certain that those are used. One of them would be the ombudsperson in the governor's office. We have every youth who is in the youth authority's custody has an attorney of record. We work very closely with the Juvenile Rights Project, which are advocates for youth offenders in our system. For a matter of fact, we have provided them office space at our facilities and open access to meet with youth. We work very closely with a statewide advisory committee that has, in addition to, you know, law enforcement folks and judges and district attorneys, et cetera, we also have additional advocates that work with the agency in terms of reviewing our policies, procedures, and making recommendations to us. We will be working, as Ms. Wilson from DAS pointed out, with other agencies in coordinating the transferability not only of what we are doing, but the transferability of some of what they are doing in terms of oversight and that transparency. So I understand that that is an issue, and we are trying to address that very aggressively.
And, Mr. Chairman, I might note also that they'll be reporting to the interim committee, the Judiciary Committees during the interim regarding the implementation and the operations of this office. That gives me some more comfort that this is the right direction to go. I just wanted to note for the record that I'm just a little bit uncomfortable with doing this in the manner that we are. I would hope that the agency will be very aggressive with this program.
Any additional questions? Seeing none.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services. We recommend that you approve the request, which is for an allocation from the State Emergency Fund of $214,607, an increase in the federal funds expenditure limitation of $7,439, and the establishment of two full-time permanent positions, 1.26 full-time equivalent.
Okay. Seeing none.
Thank you. Legislative Fiscal Office also recommends approval of the request with the understanding that there will be reports to the Judiciary Committee on how this is implemented and what the operations are looking like, as well as on the results of the Department of Justice review that Mr. Jester mentioned. And I would note that in terms of an external review, that is something an external review organization or entity, that is something that there may be some further discussion on and may be coming forward at some other point. It was not at this time felt that it was ready to move forward. There were a lot of discussion. There was a lot of discussion to be had on how that would be organized and structured and what the various roles would be. So we do recommend approval of this request.
Any additional questions? Do we have a motion to approve the LFO recommendation?
So moved.
It's been moved. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, motion passes. We will go on now. Carrier, Oregon Youth Authority. my favorite senator has a facility that's not quite open. Senator Morris, will you?
I certainly will.
Oregon Military Department. Colonel Caldwell, will you please proceed at your leisure?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here today. It's kind of like going to the dentist. You know you got to do it. When you're done, you feel a lot better, right? Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. Today we're here requesting four items before you. The first one is capital construction. Federal funds expenditure limitation increase of $340,155 to complete the design phase of the Ontario Readiness Center in Ontario. This project was first approved by the legislature in 1995 for $165,275 other funds and $330,500 in federal funds. We believed at the time we would receive federal construction funds no later than 1999. We started the design but learned that we had been slipped in the federal priority, thus we stopped the design and shelved the project. In 1999, we asked for a $1 appropriation in general fund and $1 in other funds to keep the project viable, waiting for the federal government to appropriate the construction funding. Since this time, we have subsequently been asked by the community college to relocate the project from the original site, which we have concurred with. Also, we now know the project is scheduled in the future year defense plan of the federal government for construction funding in federal fiscal year 2008. Through this funding schedule, we have been appropriated $523,000 in current federal budget to complete the design so it's ready for construction in fiscal year 08. Our intention is to complete the design by the end of this federal fiscal year, September 2006, and we need this limitation in order to proceed. That concludes my testimony. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions at this point?
Mr. Chair. Well, the obvious question is, and I assume it's affirmative, is there will be no problem in getting the plans completed by June 1.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morris, no, we don't anticipate that. We had a architect under contract and on hold, basically. As I said, we shelved it, so we don't anticipate that. The new site did create some modifications, as you would well know, but by and large, it's the same design that we had originally started.
Thank you.
Dan's recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill McGee, the Department of Administrative Services, we recommend you approve the request.
So quick. LFO recommendation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, LFO also recommends that you approve the request, and I'd like to point out that approving this request and completing the design with federal funds becoming available, the agency will probably or most likely have a policy package in their agency request for certificates of participation or general fund to match the federal fund request to complete construction of the facility.
Any additional discussion? Hearing none, is there a motion?
Well,
yes.
Additional question.
Yes.
Do we have a realistic expectation of what our match amount will be when the plans are completed and it's all wrapped up with a bowl?
Yes. Do you have that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morris, I'm going to turn to my expert back here, but it's roughly going to be probably $1.5 to $2 million of state funds. The 75-25 split is the typical. Is what we arrange with the federal government.
2.3.
So not a bad guess, I guess. But normally, that is not a full 75-25 split because the federal government doesn't recognize things like local permit fees and other items that local government charges us, so they don't calculate that in the split. So we end up eating probably about 30% of the total cost on a typical armory.
Thank you.
A motion to set the to accept the LFO recommendation.
Yes, so moved. Sure. Move we increase the 1995 federal funds capital infrastructure expenditure limitation by $340,155 for design and outdoor readiness center.
It's been moved. Is there any objection? Hearing none, motion passes.
Mr. Chairman, our second item is we're requesting the establishment of $160,000 in capital construction federal funds expenditure limitation and $120,000 in capital construction other funds expenditure limitation to complete the construction of force protection measures at the Anderson Readiness Center here in Salem. The Anderson Readiness Center houses the core function for managing emergencies in Oregon. Co-located in the facility are the Emergency Management, Military Department, Oregon State Police, Law Enforcement Data System, Department of Transportation, and Department of Corrections, Weapons, Vault, and Armory. The $21 million facility was completed and occupied in December of 2003. Critical force protection elements of the building were not funded at the outset of the construction. Since 2003, we've been able to add critical force protection items through Homeland Security Program grants. We had believed that we would receive $797,225 in grant funds and asked the legislature to place this number in our budget, believing that force protection projects would be completed by December of 2005. We recently learned that additional federal military construction funds and critical facility grant funds were approved, but our federal limitation has expired. Therefore, our request for additional expenditure limitation increase of $280,000 to complete these critical projects is necessary. Concludes my testimony.
Questions? Seeing none, DAS recommendation.
Mr. Chair, Phil McGee from the Department of Administrative Services, we recommend you approve the request.
I'm not trying to make this painless, Colonel Caldwell, but LFO recommends.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, LFO recommends approval of the request.
I believe if you go to the dentist, you should
feel
some pain.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my teeth hurt already, and we're only halfway through his request.
I'm looking for a little Novocaine right now, if you have any.
How about sedation?
Yeah, well, that work too.
Okay. Senator Schrader, do you want to
move? Sure. I move we establish a federal funds capital construction expenditure limitation of $160,000 and establish another funds capital construction expenditure limitation of $120,000 for completion of the security components at the Anderson Readiness Center.
We have a motion. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, motion passes. Next item.
Mr. Chairman, our third item is we're requesting an increase in capital construction other fund expenditure limitation by $6,094,000 for construction of the Bureau of Land Management portion of the Lane County Armed Forces Reserve Center. In our initial programming of the Lane County Armed Forces Reserve Center project back in 1994, several governmental agencies were approached to gauge their interest in entering into a development partnership. The Bureau of Land Management was one of those agencies contacted, and while interested, they declined to participate. This past summer, the BLM came back to us recently, or this past summer, with a strong desire to partner on the project. I think this is due in large part to a change in the regional leadership at the BLM. In discussions with the BLM, we developed their scope of approximately 30,000 square feet of facility and related site improvements and negotiated a cost with our design and construction contractor on the project. BLM will pay the agency for all costs associated with their portion of the development in exchange for a 25-year no-cost lease of their improvements with an option for one 25-year extension at market rates. The cost of their improvements, as I said, is $6,094,000. We would request that the emergency board add this into our current budget. That concludes my testimony.
DAS recommendation.
Bill McGee from Department of Administrative Services, we recommend you approve the request.
LFO recommendation.
LFO also recommends approval of the request.
Any comments, any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Schrader.
Yes. I'd like to move we increase the 2003 other funds capital structure limitation expenditure by $6,094,000 to add space to the Bureau of Land Management for Lane County Armed Forces Reserve Center, Phase 2.
Okay. Any discussion? Any questions? Any objection? Hearing none of all three, motion passes. We'll move on to item 31.
When the big one comes up, DAS runs. Oh, wait a minute here. Mr. Chairman, our final request today is for allocation of $426,926 from the emergency fund, increasing the other fund expenditure limitation by $95,400 and increasing the federal funds expenditure limitation by $231,550 for ensuring continued and sustained operations at the Oregon National Guard Youth Challenge Program. As we've noted in our budget hearings before the legislature, the Oregon Military Department's 2005-07 budget, legislative adopted budget, was not sufficient for the Youth Challenge Program to operate for the entire biennium. We were directed by the legislature to return to the emergency board once the average daily membership revenue was determined at the close of the session, and we could definitively determine the shortfall. In preparing our budget, we used an ADM rate of $30.06 per day, or $1,322,573 for the biennium. The ADM rate for the 2005-2006 year was determined in September 2005 at $27.66 per student per day and resulted in a shortfall of $62,065 in revenues from the projected for 2005-2007. Additionally, we anticipated the required state matching funds to be deficient during our budget hearings, and we said that, but without the ADM values, we could not determine what that shortfall would be. Thus, the committee directed us to the E-Board once we had made these determinations. As you know, this program is a partnership with the National Guard Bureau, who provides a maximum of $3,360,000, or 60 cents of the per cadet cost per year, multiplied by 400 students over the two-year budget cycle. National Guard Bureau expects the state to provide 40% match. In keeping with the National Guard Bureau 60-40 funding split, the amount of state match required to match this maximum amount of $3,360,000 is $2.24 million. Of that amount, $1.260,508 is available from the ADM or other funds. $552,566 was placed in our budget during the budget session from general funds, totaling a total of $1.8 million. In order to match the 40% requirement, we require an additional $426,926 or purpose of this request. As your analyst pointed out in her analysis, we reduced staff and deferred all unnecessary expenses during the recession. National Guard Bureau approved a temporary waiver as we explained to them our difficulties. However, they are losing their patience to a degree. I would also point out that this funding will still not meet the NGB model. Due to labor costs being higher in Oregon than the National Guard Bureau model accounts for, if we were to fill every position and meet every National Guard Bureau expectation for the program, we would be much closer to a 50-50 fund split. We have elected not to fill some administrative positions due to the high cost and the limited resources. We believe that this request represents the minimum requirement necessary to safely operate our program. We believe that we can maintain academic accreditation, health, and safety for our students and staff with this budget. With that, I conclude my testimony and be willing to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions from the committee? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the graduation rate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morris, we typically invite 150 kids to each class. We have two classes per year. We typically graduate about 110. So we lose approximately a third of these students, a little less than a third. This is a volunteer program. Current class has 140 right now. We're down about 12 from the initial start. Of that, there are 23 counties represented and 51 high schools. So it's pretty much a cross-section of Oregon. Traditionally, we lose the bulk of these students in the first 2 weeks. That's what we call pre-challenge, which is not academic. It's strictly physical and teaching them the ways of the road in our program. So that's after that, we don't have much of a loss.
Any additional questions? Ask recommendation.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee. This is Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services. We recommend that you approve this request with the following modifications. We recommend that you allocate $426,926 from the State Emergency Fund, increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $95,400, and increase the federal funds expenditure limitation as requested, and increase it by $231,550 for the Youth Challenge Program.
Okay. Any questions? LFO recommendation, and then I'll come back to Colonel Caldwell.
LFO concurs with the DAS recommendation.
Okay. Colonel Caldwell?
Yes, sir.
Do you concur with the DAS? Do you have any issues with the DAS recommendation or the LFO recommendation?
Well, of course I do, sir, but I'm not going to mention them here.
There's an experience to have the DAS.
You can ask them, they would probably tell you that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to approve the allocation of $426,926 in the emergency fund, increase the funds expenditure limitation by $95,400, increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $231,550 for Oregon Youth Challenge Program.
Okay. Any discussion? We have a motion. Any objection? Hearing none. Motion passes. Thank you, Colonel Caldwell. Good to see you as always.
Thank you very much.
I will take the first three sort of straightforward capital programs. Senator Schrader will take the Youth Challenge Program, if that's okay.
Sure.
We go to the Department of Education.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brett West, Chief of Operations for the Oregon Department of Education. We're here to seek a release of $1.5 million for the Pre-K Integrated Data System, otherwise known as KIDS. This reservation was approved by the last legislative session and is phase two of the KIDS project. This item was heard before the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Technology Management earlier this week, and Doug Costi, the father of kids, if I may, is here to talk to you about the project.
Thank you, Brett. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for your record, my name again is Doug Costi. I'm Assistant Superintendent for the Oregon Department of Education, in charge of assessment and information services. The problem we have today in education is that it takes 6 weeks to move data, student-level data, around the enterprise from high school to high school. I'm here to talk about that problem, and this proposal is to address that problem. There are actually two pieces to my proposal, or to this request. One is for what I refer to as the horizontal integration, that is the K-12 movement of transcript information from high school to high school. The second part of my request is for $300,000, and that is to move the information up. I am not going to talk about the second part of the request. Chancellor Pernsteiner and Commissioner Cam Brawley, Price Brawley, will be discussing that portion, but I'm going to talk about specifically the integration of the K-12 data. As Brett referenced, this is phase two of a three-phase project. It builds upon the database initiative, the work that was done to develop web-based data collection and collection mechanism and reporting mechanism for educational data. It is focused at the student level as opposed to the school or district level. The intent for this funding will be used to establish standard data definitions, a data dictionary, if you will, that will be commonly used between all districts, similar to the chart of accounts in the database initiative, so we can get good, comparable, timely information on students as they move through the system. The second intent of the funding is to purchase hardware and off-the-shelf software, what we refer to as business intelligence tools, to allow for the population of the data warehouse or repository and to do validation and interchange between the different data stores. And then the third component is to develop exchange rules and procedures. What that means is, how do we move the data from one district to another? What are the processes and procedures and policies that need to be developed to create what we call a handshake? If District A requests information from District B, the handshake has to follow some policies and procedures, and then there's some technical underpinnings to make that happen. The benefits and performance measures for this project will be: student data will be comparable between these data stores, so what's in one will be the same as what's in another. Student data will be able to be transferred electronically within 2 business days. It could be instantaneous, but there's a process and policy for developing that handshake in order to do the appropriate movement of data in compliance with FERPA regulations or privacy regulations that the federal government requires us to follow. This also creates a foundation for standardized access. This project will not include the access to the repository. That is part of what we call phase three. There will be some work along there in terms of prototypes and pilots being developed by the districts. And overall, this will improve the data quality and really establish the foundation for longitudinal reporting And finally, this connects to the integrated data system, integrated data transfer system. A subset of these records that are commonly defined will be moved then from K-12, the high schools, if you will, up to the community colleges and higher ed, and you'll hear about that in the next presentation. I'll conclude my testimony there and ask for any questions or comments.
Any questions or comments? Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doug, good seeing you again today. Appreciate the time we spent together yesterday. Just want to put on the record that you've just recently hired a private sector individual to be your technical architect. Mm-hmm. He'll be working closely with the local districts to find out what their needs are. And I want to compliment you for that. I think it's a very good idea. And the people that are going to use this at the user level are the people that you really need to have their input on. I think that's very important. And secondly, to just state for the record that many of us, especially those of us who sit on the JLCIMT, are pretty sensitive these days to cost issues, expansion of scope issues, cost overruns, completion dates, those types of things. And just want to make sure that you stay very much in line with everything that you've projected here. And it would be marvelous if you can come back under budget and ahead of schedule. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Comments? Yes, Senator Schrader.
Follow up on Representative Kruff's comments. I mean, I think this is potentially a really good thing, and this is a chance for us to show Oregon's situation in a positive light. Hopefully with the database initiative was, I think, an outstanding success. TESA project, those types of things have made, I think, our system of education truly a system and much more successful. Gets raised reviews by the teachers who sometimes feel overwhelmed with some of these great ideas we come up with. But this one is great. This is one that could, I think, help the student more than anything else. And while I'm sensitive to our department's needs and the school district's needs and the school's needs, this actually is geared towards the student. I think Oregon's going to be a pioneer in this and really proud to support this project and I think the next item on the agenda, too.
Any additional comments? Seeing none, DAS recommendation.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Who is that person?
I hope she feels the dark side of the universe.
And I hope, since Mr. Bender here has to do double duty, I hope she feels a little bit guilty.
Yeah, I got some questions. I'm not sure about this project.
Okay, I'll leave the harassment at this level.
Mr. Chair, and Mr. Bender is completely up to the task, so I don't have any concerns there. Sue McGlashan with Department of Administrative Services. DAS does recommend approval of this request. It was contingent on approval by JLCIMT, which was given Tuesday of this week with some instructions and similar to what DAS is recommending in terms of unscheduling $1.18 million of the funding until the Department of Education provides us with more information on the professional services contracts, because that process is currently underway. In fact, the RFPs are not quite out there, and so we don't really know what the actual costs are. So DAS does plan on unscheduling that $1.18 million until we receive and LFO receives that information. The department had also asked for a 0.5 FTE relative to this position, and they're actually going to need a 0.71 FTE, and so we recommend an increase to the 0.71 FTE. And then finally, I would just note that there is a difference between the DAS recommendation and the LFO recommendation in terms of acknowledging receipt of a report, and BAM didn't really feel that it fell under that that area that the agency was actually requesting that you acknowledge receipt of a report, but we're fine with that, and we concur with LFO's recommendation on that.
Any additional questions? LFO recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. LFO recommendation is, as Ms. McGlashan mentioned, essentially identical to BAM's. We are also recommending that you approve the allocation of the $1.5 million with the understanding that DAS will unschedule $1.18 million of the allocation pending a presentation of more information to DAS and LFO on the professional services contract portion of the budget, and also that you increase the one limited duration position from the 0.5 that was requested to 0.71 FTE. That has no budgetary impact, but it does make a technical correction. As mentioned, JLCIMT also made this recommendation, so it is concurrent with the LFO recommendation. One thing I do want to mention about the project itself, just to clarify that I think I'm not sure that this has become clear in the discussion, is that this is considered phase two of this project. Phase two is not expected to result in a situation where data can be transmitted electronically between all high schools in the state. The goal is to hit most of the high schools in the state in phase two. The department will be working with the largest high schools in order to have the most students in order to assure transferability there. But some of the smaller school districts' student data systems may not be brought into the system in phase two. The department intends to ask for additional funds in the next biennium to complete this project, which will be called phase three. But do know that in the event that phase three is not approved, phase two will be able to carry on as a standalone project.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Thank you. Steve, that brings up a good question here, and one that we failed to talk about yesterday. My apologies. I'm chairman of the board of the state's first K through, next year K through 12 online virtual charter school. We're chartered out of Sile School District. How will this system, in terms of integrating with all high schools, integrate with charter schools and virtual online schools like mine, and which they're likely to be more of?
Chair Devlin, Representative Krupp, that's an excellent question. And at this point, just as a point of clarification, the intent of this is to exchange information between public schools, not specifically just high schools, but all schools. We're working very closely with the Oregon Virtual School District Initiative. We don't know yet how the intersection will occur in terms of charter schools and public elementaries, but you raise an excellent point, and I have to dive a little bit deeper into that in terms of what that means relative to the records. My guess is charter schools, the public charter schools records, would be just like any other public school records.
And Mr. Chairman, may I ask, is that an intention of that integration would be considered for this particular phase or for the next phase?
Chair Devlin, Representative Krupp, at a minimum, we would architect the solution into this phase. Whether that becomes a deliverable of this phase, I'd have to take a look at it in more detail.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any additional discussion? Do we have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move we approve the request for the Integrated Data Systems Kids Initiative. With the understanding the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule $1.18 million of the allocation pending the presentation for further information from the Department of Education, DAS, and the Legislative Fiscal Office on the professional services contract. And we would increase the one limited duration position to 0.71 FTE, subject to affirmative recommendation from the JLCIMT committee.
Okay. We have a motion on the table. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections to the motion? Hearing no objections, the motion passes. We will go on to the next agenda item, item 13. I'll designate one for both. So that the people in the audience are aware, after this item, I may jump around a little bit, not a lot, but I have at least one member that has to leave early, that has a commitment that they have to get to. I understand.
Morning, Chair Devlin, members of the subcommittee. Thank you for allowing us to be here this morning. For the record, my name is George Fernsteiner.
Mr. Chancellor, so that people are aware, I'm going to, after your presentation and we go through this item, I'm going to go to the OIT proposal, just so that they are aware. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for announcing that item next. I appreciate that. Again, for the record, my name is George Kernsteiner with the Oregon University System. I'm joined by Cam Preuss Brawley, the Commissioner of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, and Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services Budget Management Division. We're here today requesting the release of funds appropriated during the 2005 legislative session for the Integrated Data Transfer System. It is a system that involves all three sectors of public education in Oregon, the Department of Education, the Community College and Workforce Development Department, and the Oregon University System. We understand that your approval, if granted here today and tomorrow, will be subject to a further approval of the performance measures by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. Their first meeting is scheduled for next week, and this item will be before them as well. This project, again, is a joint effort of all three agencies, and it's carried on as part of a much larger effort that the Joint Boards of Education and Higher Education are undertaking in a variety of areas where they're trying to bring together the three sectors of education much more closely to make the connections closer, clearer, and easier for students to understand. This particular project, the Integrated Data Transfer System, has basically two elements. The first is it is a pipeline that transmits student transcripts on demand between and among the high schools, the community colleges, and the universities. And it is a translator. It's not a new statewide data system. It merely allows the schools and the colleges to communicate student information and data among the institutions. Essentially, what's involved is that selected data will be pulled from existing student information systems, sent to what amounts to a clearinghouse, the University of Texas, which has the electronic data interchange protocols, and will then be converted and sent back to the universities or the colleges or the high schools, whatever the receiving entity would be. It will allow us then to receive the information in a common format, to allow students and school districts to move information much more quickly, at least to us, so that our admissions staff, our counselors, and our faculty have access to the full student records at the time of admission decisions and advising decisions. And Cam, I think, has some additional comments on some of these. Proceed.
For the record, Cam Preuss Brawley, Commissioner of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Our interest in this project is provides the ability for community colleges to talk across and among each other about student records, as well as vertically to the university system or to high schools. So we're looking at both, and I was told I should take care about horizontal and vertical, but we are interested in making sure, because many community college students attend more than one community college, and when they want their transcript, they don't necessarily want to have to carry a piece of paper. So the system, as it is envisioned and planned here, would allow for that transfer to happen electronically, and it could the student could say, I want my transcript sent to these five colleges. Could be Lynn Benton, Chemeketa, OSU, from Sio High School, all at the same time. So we see it as the chancellor has indicated, a real advantage for students and advisors in the institutions.
Mr. Chairman, I might add that I'm a victim of such antiquated. I shared this with Cam yesterday. I went looking for my college transcripts and couldn't find them, and luckily found them in another file totally disassociated with college transcripts a couple of days ago, as a matter of fact. And I guess my only question is, why didn't we do this a long time ago? It seems that this is the 21st century, and you can do some incredible things online today. And it just makes absolute sense that those types of opportunities for the system to work more efficiently should be addressed. So congrats on, I think, bringing forward the appropriate direction.
Yes, Senator Schrader.
Sure. Representative Krupp's enthusiasm once again for this type of project is very, very, very good, and I think is a long time coming, so it'll be exciting to see it put together. I know there's some legislation that passed last session that will hopefully figure into this in some significant way. I have one concern I just wanted to get on the table on the outcomes, at least that were expected in as a result of this. Most of the items mentioned as proposed measures seem to be more output type things that I think are good internal measures that the university system, community college system, Department of Ed might want. I just would like to get on the record that as a legislator, my goal by doing all this would be that we'd have kids graduating in a shorter period of time. The average time to graduation would decrease compared to what it is today. I would like to see that benchmark next legislative session when you come in for your performance measure. How it's going to change as a result of these types of things, phase two and hopefully phase three. The other one I would hope that we would see is the percentage of kids graduating would be greater from community college or the university system. Those are the positive things that are, you know, student-related that I would like to see coming out of here. I'm sure it'll happen. And I look forward to the benchmarks you all will be setting as a result of this initiative. It's very exciting, very exciting. Thank you.
Is there anyone from the Department of Ed that would like to say anything? Since I don't have a Department of Ed.
Chair Devlin, for the record, Vicki Fleming, Deputy Superintendent from the Department of Education. We're fully on board with this Pre-K-20 initiative for a variety of reasons, mostly related to what Senator Schrader just mentioned in terms of improved student outcomes. I would just add that we have been directed by the State Board and in our work with the Joint Boards of Education to create a set of performance metrics that do relate to the outcomes for students as a part of the policy work that they're engaged in as well. So related to this project and the specific outcomes of the data systems, there will be overarching goals that we have that we will agree to together at the board level that we will bring to you when they're finished.
Any additional questions? The DAS recommendation.
Chair, Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services. We recommend you approve the request, contingent upon approval of performance measures by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, and we're comfortable with the modifications that Mr. Bender will discuss as part of his recommendation.
LFO recommendation.
Mr. Chair, LFO also recommends approval of the request. Please note that within the request itself is a request that there's be an understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule these funds pending approval by Joint Legislative Audit Committee of performance measures for the integrated data transfer system. We do, though, recommend two adjustments to the request. The first is a technical adjustment only, and that is to reduce the 8 limited duration positions to 4.52 FTE. This will have no impact on the budget, but it does correct an error in the request. And the second adjustment that we recommend is that you add an additional understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will continue to unschedule $400,000 of the amount allocated to the Department of Higher Education pending a report by the three departments to DAS and the Legislative Fiscal Office with additional details on the proposed budget for performance feedback. Performance feedback is primarily the process of providing information back to high schools on as to how their students are performing in post-secondary education. And we would like additional information on this portion of the budget before these funds are released to the departments for expenditure.
Any additional questions or comments? Do we have a motion?
Sure, Mr. Chair. I recommend that we approve the request for allocation of $300,000 to the Department of Education, $664,400 to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, and $2,081,250 to the Department of Higher Ed from the respective special purpose appropriation made to the Emergency Board for these departments for the integrated data systems, and approve the establishment of 8 limited duration positions, 4.52 FTE, for the Department of Higher Education for developing the integrated data transfer system, with the understanding the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule the allocated funds and position authority pending approval by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee for performance measures for the integrated data system. And we will continue that unscheduling of $400,000 for the allocation to the Department of Higher Ed, depending a report for their departments to DAS and Legislative Fiscal Office with additional details on the proposed budget for performance feedback, too.
Yes, Senators.
Should the motion include the LFO recommendation to reduce the 8 limited duration positions to 4.52 FTE?
Is that a friendly amendment?
Okay.
I did say
thank you.
Thanks, sir, for paying attention.
There's a motion on the table. Is there any additional discussion? Hearing none, are there any objections to the motion? Hearing no objection, motion passes.
Thank you, Chair.
Senator Schrader has requested that he carry items 4 and 13. So he will carry items 4 and 13.
Chair.
We will now move on to item number 11.
Chairman Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jay Kenton, and I am the Vice Chancellor for Finance and Administration for the Oregon University System. With me today is Dr. Martha Ann Dow, OIT President, and Dr. Bob Nettles, OIT's Vice President for Finance and Administration. We are here today to request you establish a $10 million Article 11F bond capital construction expenditure limitation for the construction of the Center for Health Professions on the OIT main campus in Klamath Falls, Oregon. This request is made to fund the planned construction of the first phase of a planned two-phase $22.5 million capital project to create the OIT Center for Health Professions facility. You will note that phase two of this project is contemplated in the Article 11G report that will be discussed later today, and assuming that this project is approved by the State Board of Higher Education and the Governor, will be included in the 0709 capital budget request. Phase one of the project was reviewed by the State Board of Higher Education at their October 2005 meeting and was subsequently approved at the January 6, 2006 meeting of this group. You will note that our original request was for a $10 million limitation. However, the department agrees with Mr. Bender and Mr. McGee's recommendation to add another $1.2 million of other funds limitation to this project, bringing the total limitation request to $11.2 million. In addition, I would like to thank Mr. McGee and Mr. Bender for their constructive review of this project and its finances. Through their good work, we were able to find errors in our analyses with resultant savings that, if the project is approved, will significantly reduce proposed tuition rates for students. The project is being brought to you today in order to address the critical shortage of trained healthcare professionals in the workforce today. We do not believe it is in the best interest of Oregon to delay this project. The project comes with the strong endorsement of the State Board of Higher Education's Academic Excellence and Economic Development Workgroup and the OIT Advisory Board, comprised of business and healthcare leaders from around the state. I will now turn to Dr. Dow, who will elaborate on the need for the facility and its proposed uses.
Chairman Devlin and members of the committee, my name is Martha Ann Dow, President of Oregon Institute of Technology. In my testimony this morning, I would like to establish the need and the use of the facility, and Vice President Bob Nettles will elaborate for you on the financial model and the tuition. Oregon Institute of Technology has a long history of providing graduates in the health professions of the state of Oregon. Our radiology program dates back to 1947, actually our birthing. Currently, we offer programs in the following, in the allied health modalities: medical imaging, nuclear medicine, sonography or ultrasound, vascular technology, echocardiography, health sciences, clinical lab science, paramedic, respiratory care, dental hygiene, and of course host the OHSU nursing program. The total current enrollment in these programs exceeds 1,100 and has increased by more than 300 students since 2002. The Oregon Department of Employment forecasts the need for an additional 24,000 allied healthcare workers by 2012. Currently, 100,000 healthcare workers are employed in Oregon. The healthcare sector growth represents 14% of the statewide employment forecast growth. These shortages are increasing overall healthcare costs as well. Some of the, I think, constant areas that are causing this overall healthcare shortage are the fact that the baby boomers are moving through the trend lines, many of us, and also the retirement level of the currently employed workforce is increasing. Recent data from the Oregon Hospital Association survey documents a projection that hospitals are spending over $37 million annually on agency staffing, which means traveling employees, to supplement this workforce shortage. If a permanent workforce in Oregon were available, this would reduce the cost for the hospitals, costs which are now passed on to the consumer. OIT recognized the critical shortage in the healthcare industry in 2002 and began responding by building partnerships with industries and other educational institutions, increasing the number of students and graduates, of which we are now at capacity. Active involvement with a variety of state efforts, including the Governor's Healthcare Task Force and the Community College Healthcare Action Plan. The legislature and the governor designated OIT's initiative as the Oregon Center for the Health Professions in the last legislative session without any funding. We have continued to develop an aggressive plan for meeting this healthcare workforce need. Our goals are the following. Become a state-of-the-industry recognized center for Oregon and also the Pacific Northwest for the benefit of the state. Offer a broad base of the allied health professions opportunities for students who want very much to access these programs. Be a leader in solving Oregon's healthcare workforce shortage and meet both the healthcare needs in rural and urban Oregon. We will continue to monitor the healthcare workforce needs and offer new programs as determined by these needs. One of the very important parts of our assessment of need has been looking at the statistics of the workforce employment issues through the Oregon Department as well as nationally. We do not want to oversubscribe or overproduce students and graduates for these professions. So we have been very conscious of how we develop these needs and how we will begin to make a difference. We want to offer more Oregonians the opportunity in healthcare and for good paying jobs. The average salary of our graduates in the allied health programs is $43,000 at the baccalaureate level. We also have many of our graduates who are receiving $60,000 per year, particularly in the ultrasound field. We want a self-sustaining model with operating revenue and capital. So our first phase one, which is the 42,000 square feet, we have projected the ability with that approval to increase the capacity by 420 students. The efforts that support this are still the Governor's Task Force on Healthcare, and we have been instrumental in developing an institute that will have both private and public sector engaged in order to help facilitate the goals for Oregon. We have a capital campaign underway, which includes significant private support and industry support. And the Academic Excellence Economic Development Committee of the Oregon University Board is fully supportive. I would like to tell you that I know of some of your concerns, one of which is this year we have experienced a downturn in the number of applicants. We have been ranging, having to turn away between 200 and 300 applicants per year. This year it was 192. A little lower. And so the question could be, how will your enrollment growth support this particular financial model? I would like to say to you that because we have been turning away applicants for almost 5 years already because of lack of capacity, the word is out. The students know that it is very difficult to get access into the program because of the limited capacity. This is the first year we have seen the downturn in the number of applicants. I would say to you, we have not recruited for these programs the last 4 years because we do not have the capacity to take in more students. We want to be fair to our target market. But at this point, they're getting the message. And if we can lift that capacity boundary, I will promise you we will have no trouble recruiting the students that we're projecting for our enrollment increase. I have been on the end of many disgruntled parents' phone calls because of our limitation on the accessibility of these programs. This project is urgent in order for OIT to respond to the critical health care shortage, which is already upon us. Our business plan has been reviewed and endorsed by our stakeholders and our constituents, and particularly those who are part of our fundraising campaign. These stakeholders know the immediate urgency of the workforce need and are aggressively supporting this project. I know you very much want to know about our perspective on the financial plan, which does include tuition increases. And I would like to introduce to you Vice President Bob Nettles, who will speak to this particular area.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, before we go too far, I am Bob Nettles, for the record, Vice President for Finance and Administration at Oregon Institute of Technology. And before we go any further, I'd like to answer your first question, and that's, I am from the South. I've been at Oregon Tech now for 3.5 years, and I pray every day when I get up and go out and meet the public that someone won't ask me, where are you from? OIT proposes to use the same self-support tuition model for the Center for Health Professions expansion project that we currently use for our engineering program with Boeing, our distance education program at Klamath Falls, and our dental hygiene program in LeGrand with ODS and Eastern Oregon University. The project financing expenditures for this expansion healthcare education opportunity for 420 students are projected to be $3.3 million by full implementation. 80% of these expenditures will be for faculty, supplies, and equipment. 20% will be for facility debt service. Revenue for providing this access will be from dedicating tuition from the additional students admitted to the expansion program. OIT has current plans to charge a 5% annual increase for 3 years beginning in 2006-2007 to new students admitted to these programs. Existing students, we hope, will graduate without incurring any of this 5% increase. Resident tuition for 2006-2007 will be $4,590, $4,820 for 2007-08, and $5,060 for 2008-09. We are not projecting the need for additional increases beyond 2008-09. As a point of comparison, tuition for OIT's clinical lab science program is currently $7,110. Tuition for the dental hygiene program, which is an 18-month program in LeGrand, is $17,250. The tuition for the paramedic education program is currently $6,300 for the OHSU nursing program at OIT. Excuse me, paramedic is $6,300 and the nursing program is $7,425. It is obvious to us and to you that students do not like higher tuitions. However, our OIT students recognize the value of this healthcare education and the return on their investment of hard work and money. They also acknowledge that healthcare education is more expensive due to the small class sizes and the expensive equipment involved. And with that, I'll close and stand for any questions.
Before we go to any questions, I do see that Senator Whitsitt is here. Would you like to address the committee for a short period of time?
Yeah.
The only thing that I wanted to say is I have one of my I votes here that has to leave at 10 o'clock. And I know
I will be brief. Chair Devlin, committee members, I think if you look at this from an investment standpoint, if it were a private opportunity, many of us would be rushing to invest. We have a situation where the service that is needed is twice the capacity. OIT is the only provider of the service, and the product that they produce is at three times the demand that we have the capacity to produce. If we don't do this, we know for certain that there will be at least 400 students a year that will not be able to access this education in Oregon at any price. So it's a great opportunity for the state to invest in education that is really needed and provide health services to the people of Oregon. Thank you.
Quick question. It's kind of an unrelated question for President Dow. You stated that the average salary, I believe, for graduates at the baccalaureate level was $43,000 to $60,000. Unrelated question, but what's the average starting salary for an instructor or an assistant professor at OIT in those programs?
Probably about 50 or less.
I just want to get that on the record.
And believe me, they know that.
Yeah, thanks. Any additional questions?
I have a concern.
Yes.
I've had the opportunity, I really appreciate talking with the President and Jay and others on this project, and I would certainly not stand in the way of an affirmative vote by this committee to have this go forward. But I think it's important to put on the record, you know, some concerns, because I'm big on creative financing. I think that's fine. And this is a great project. I think Senator Whitsitt spoke well, frankly, in his brief moments about the investment and making sure that we get these people out to be a critical piece of our workforce. We're going to be needing these types of individuals. But I do worry a little bit. It wasn't in the governor's budget originally, way back when. The process for financing this has sort of morphed over time. I think the need has driven, you know, a desire to get this done as soon as possible. I would hope that in most cases the university system would bring forward, you know, the projects, you know, perhaps in a more deliberative manner, where we're not driven by the need so much. And the idea, the one specific thing I think this committee and the body and the legislature should be aware of is that this is unique in that we are actually tying tuition to funding a particular building. I think it's been pointed out accurately that PSU and maybe some other schools have used tuition increases over time to help fund their programs and buildings. But this is a direct linkage, and I'm not real keen on this. I understand the exception again. The students seem interested and aware of this. The differential tuition doesn't bother me. This is a profession that costs more. They're going to make more. So I have no problem with that. I've been assured that it stays within the 3% tuition increase that we talked about as a legislature. So we're serving notice to the university system that we're still hanging tough on that, because this small program, although it'll be extremely worthwhile, will not cause us to break that. But philosophically, I just have a tough time at this point in my brief tenure here in this body to really get interested in funding a particular building based on raising tuition or portion. It's only 20%. That was good to hear. I appreciate that piece of information. So I probably will be a no vote unless it causes this project to fail, and then I would be interested in making sure it goes forward with the caveats here. So I really appreciate all the good work y'all have done on this.
Well, we've had many conversations, and I appreciate the opportunity to have those, and you certainly eased a great deal of my concerns that I had. I certainly share with Senator Schrader in regards to bumping very close on the tuition levels that we would like to see. I'm not nearly as concerned about the financing portion of with the tuition that you are proposing and the reliance of that. The urgency is certainly something that we've been working towards, and with the notification and such that's coming later as to how we proceed with those in the future. This is one that certainly is, the workforce need is certainly there, and I'm pretty comfortable with it. And so I appreciate the time that you have taken to bring us up to speed on it, and I would be hopeful that it does get approved in the committee, and I'm not so inclined to do the symbolic no vote in that I feel very strongly that it is a necessary item.
Seeing none, the DAS recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services. We do recommend you approve the request as modified to $10 million other funds, Article 11 F1 fund capital construction expenditure limitation, and the $1.2 million other funds other revenues capital construction expenditure limitation. The recommendation is contingent upon the tuition differential being charged only to new students and not to current students.
And a full recommendation.
Mr. Chair and members, LFO also recommends approval of the project for the amounts that are in the modified request in the letter that we handed out to you at this meeting. That is to say, $10 million Article 11 F1 bonds and $1.2 million in other revenues, which in this case would be foundation funds. We recommend that you do this with the understanding that the State Board of Higher Education intends to limit tuition rate differentials to the minimum needed to self-finance the cost of expanding OIT's college professional program enrollments. The actual proposed tuitions that the State Board of Higher Education reviewed earlier, it turns out, are more than are necessary in order to self-finance this program. And we recommend that you let the State Board of Higher Education know that your understanding is that their intent was, and that their intent remains, to limit these tuition rate differentials to the minimum needed.
Any additional discussion? Senator Morris.
Question of LFO. The differential is what percentage from the pro forma against what you judge to be the required amount?
The differential that had been proposed and that had been reviewed by the State Board of Higher Education earlier was going to be increasing as the project was phased in, and by the year 2011-12, the differential would have been approximately $1,760, which represented about a 43% higher tuition rate for students in these programs compared to students in other OIT programs. It's not possible to exactly project what would be needed, but an initial review of this, it looked like a $700 tuition differential as opposed to a $1,700 would be sufficient if the enrollment target of 420 students is met. I think that this is something that would need to be reviewed as the program is phased in, but that the intent would be that the tuition differential level be set so as to self-finance the program and not to be set at a level higher than would be necessary to do so.
Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, without going through and reading all of the numbers, I move the LFO recommendation.
Is there any additional discussion? Hearing none, is there any objection to the motion? Would you please note Senator Schrader? Representative Scott, would you be good enough to carry this at the committee board?
Thank you.
And we will go. Only one objection. Motion passes. We will actually jump to items 27 and 32, and we're going to try to do those in about 10 minutes.
Department of Justice is up first on the address confidentiality program.
Are you up here by yourself?
Just you and me.
Yeah.
by myself.
Please proceed.
This little bit here. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Connie Gallagher. I'm the Director of Crime Victims Assistance at the Oregon Department of Justice. The department is requesting general fund appropriation as well as expenditure limitation in order to assist us in operating the Oregon Address Confidentiality Program. Most of you probably recall this as Senate Bill 850, which passed unanimously in both chambers towards the end of last legislative session. Just as a little reminder, this is the bill that will provide another tool that will assist victims of domestic violence, stalking, and sexual assault in remaining safe. What the program will do is provide victims with an opportunity to keep the actual physical location of their residence off of public records. The department will be able to provide participants in the program with an ID card that will give a post office box where all their first-class mail will be delivered. The department will then retrieve the first-class mail and forward it on to the actual location of the victim. The Attorney General is strongly committed to this program, as are 19 other states which operate address confidentiality programs. An address confidentiality program makes good sense from a public policy standpoint as well as the human cost standpoint. I'm not going to go over the operational details at the moment, given that we're short on time, but I'm more than happy to answer any questions that anyone might have. We respectfully request that the subcommittee forward this proposal with a due pass recommendation to the full committee. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, Kelly Friels from the Department of Administrative Services. The request is for $81,664 of general fund and the establishment of one permanent full-time position, 0.5 FTE, and we are recommending approval of that with the understanding that because of the uncertainty of the cost, that the Department of Administrative Services would unschedule half of those resources.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if we'll be your good friend here in a minute, but LFO is recommending that you deny the request, not based on the merits of the program or the bill, but more so around that there was no commitment that we know of as staff of funding this with E-fund or general fund made during session. It was anticipated it was going to be funded with other funds or federal funds, depending on what could be generated, and that for that reason that we are recommending denying the request.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. For the sake of the committee, I think many of you are aware that I have been working behind the scenes with the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, and that this item would not be on the agenda if they didn't want it on the agenda. Put it frankly. Is there any additional discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say that I think in this day and age that we live in, that public safety has to always be our first consideration, and this is a very proper direction, in my opinion, and I have no problems at all with moving this request forward. And I do appreciate DASA's recommendation to unschedule a part of it, because I think there probably are some opportunities to find some other funding sources to be a part of that. But I think we really need to go ahead with it. I'm very much a yes vote.
And I appreciate that. Is there any additional comment? Senator Morse, do we have a motion?
We do have a motion, Mr. Chair. I would like to just make a comment before making the motion. The importance of this issue in light of approvals that we have made and continue to make in this emergency board process. It's a very small amount, but it is very important. And for that reason, and by policy, as mentioned, you know, it was unanimously supported by the body. So a matter of public policy, it is important. And to implement it at this time, I think, is appropriate. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would move that the emergency board allocate $75,666 from the emergency fund and establish one limited duration which is the equivalent of 0.46 FTE for the Oregon Address Confidentiality Program, and request the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule $37,833 of the allocated funds pending better information on the actual costs of the program and potential other revenues contributed to the program.
I would point out to the committee that the reason there is a slight difference is we did some more working to get the number down a little bit, and that all the parties, including the Speaker, the President, and the Department of Justice, are aware of those changes. Is there any additional discussion? Is there any objection to the motion?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Just a comment, if I may, that given the fairly minute amount of general fund compared to the scheme of the universe that's requested here, I'm going to ask LFO to scrutinize the Department of Justice's budget from here until next session and make sure there's absolutely no other program that will require additional general fund allocation that the legislature is not already aware of. Because it's just almost inconceivable to me that they could not find $70,000 to fund such a worthwhile program. Given the language in the bill, it seemed pretty obvious to me that, and given how many opportunities there are for creative financing in our well-intentioned state government, that many departments can find money. And just astonishing to me that an agency that has got a great deal of other funds that's mostly general fund couldn't find any money to finance this program. I'd ask, if that's okay, Mr. Chair,
yeah,
to have our fiscal staff make sure that, you know, because maybe we've strapped the Attorney General's office way too much, and there's just absolutely no money to do anything. I just hate to see that.
Are there any actual objections? Concerns, but not good.
I just have concerns.
Okay. With that, the motion passes. Again, will my co-sponsor on the bill, Senator Morse, carry it?
Good delay. Thank you.
Representative Scott, I was going to attempt to do the final general fund item on the agenda.
Let's go ahead.
Okay.
Quickly.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Prinz from the Criminal Justice Commission is coming forward, and I'll let him take the ball and keep in mind that we're under a very short time.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Prinz, Executive Director of the Criminal Justice Commission, just brought Devarshi Bajpai, who's running this drug court grant process. You've got Mr. Wilson's approval. This is the approval or the appropriation for the drug courts that were part of the meth package. If you have any questions, I've got Devarshi here, and I also have Carmen Merlot here, who would be the administering agency for some federal funds that we'd like to package together with this general fund appropriation to fund get as many drug courts up and running as we can. So if there's any questions, we'll be able to answer them. If not, I'll just be quiet.
Any questions?
Just a quick comment, Mr.
Yes.
Chair. That I would hope that we'll have performance outcomes as a result of the money that we expend, particularly for the drug courts and, frankly, the rest of the meth package, too, how it's going to improve the current outcomes that are being measured. We're going to see an improvement over the original target, so we could do that.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Schrader, what we've done is worked with the Judicial Department. They had some performance measures they're working on. We worked with them to get the performance measures I think you're looking for in the area of lowering recidivism, fewer kids being born to parents that are meth addicted. So I think we've done that, and we'll be glad to get that data to you as it comes in.
Next session's fine.
Mr. Chair, actually, they are to report to the audit committee.
Oh, good.
I'm not sure when in Dallas' schedule, but on performance measures, so you'll have that opportunity.
We'll see you then.
Okay. Any additional discussion?
Yeah, just quickly, Mr. Chairman. I voted against the meth bill package on the principle of the prescription drug requirement or prescriptions for Sudafed, basically, and that was the only reason I voted against it. Strongly support all of the other elements in that bill, including this one.
So we don't have to go through Representative
Phillips'
car.
No. That I can assure you.
Inside joke.
I'm not going there. Any additional discussion? DAS recommendation.
Mr. Chair, Kelly Fields with DAS, and we are recommending approval of this request.
LFO recommendation.
Mr. Chair, and quickly, members of the committee, this is a $2.5 million special purpose appropriation. We recommend that be made available to for the drug court program. They were required to come back to the Judiciary Committee. They did appear before the Joint Judiciary Committee AE at its December meeting, and I had a positive recommendation forward with this recommendation or with this request. And I should also note that something during the session was not known as that goes along with this is that the governor's allocated just shy of $3 million from one-time burn grant funds to sort of augment this for this current biennium. I will note that is a one-time amount, and that just shy of $3 million will not be available in future biennia unless there are other funds identified that are unknown at this point.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move we allocate $2.5 million in a special purpose appropriation made to the Emergency Board for a grant program to create and expand drug courts.
We have a motion on the table. Is there any additional discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, motion passes. Representative Krupp, will you carry?
I'd be happy to.
Okay, thank you. We will now go, I'm going to do actually the two remaining Department of Justice items, and then we're going to come back to higher ed and community colleges. Item
25. Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Pete Shepard. I'm the Deputy Attorney General. I'm accompanied by Cheryl Pellegrini, who is the attorney in charge of the crime section at the Department of Justice, in which the items 25 and 26, from which items 25 and 26 are administered, and our colleague Mr. Friels is here from the Department of Administrative Services to my left. Mr. Chair, as to item 25, Attorney General Myers requests that the Legislative Assembly increase other funds expenditure limitation by $217,862 and establish one permanent full-time criminal investigator position, the equivalent of 0.83 FTE. Since 2001, the Cooperative Disability Investigations Unit, or CDIU, has existed within the Criminal Justice Division of the Department of Justice. The mission of the Cooperative Disability Investigator Unit is to gather evidence of disability fraud through a federal and state partnership that's funded entirely by federal funds from the Social Security Administration. The unit has been a success in our view since 2001. To date, the estimated amount of savings have been about $32 million in federal monies and an additional $22 million in avoided costs to state resources. Recently, the Social Security Administration added one analyst position to the unit to enable the unit to attack a backlog of cases that has developed, and the Social Security Administration, our federal partner in the matter, recommended and requested that we seek authority for one additional investigative position. We think the program has been a resounding success and that the additional position will help us build on that success. We hope the request receives your approval.
Yes, Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have a backlog of over 80 cases. You have two investigators working now full-time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I believe that's correct.
Okay. So, obviously, the math works out that if, according to the narrative here, if each investigator completes an average of two cases a week, you got two investigators, that's four cases a week times 10 weeks, there's 40 cases done, times 20 weeks, there's 80 cases done. I'm assuming then by needing an additional investigator that you're having an increasing number of complaints that you're having to open up case files on.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, we have a continuing influx of cases. The demand is not going away, but I can't speak. Perhaps Ms. Pellegrini can speak to the rate of complaints, which I think is your question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I'm not sure of the rate of complaints. What I can tell you is that this is one of 19 programs in the nation, and we are second only to the program in Cleveland in terms of the number of cases that we process. and the amount that we collect and the amount of savings that inure to both federal and state programs. That's an indirect way of answering your question. I don't have the figures. I'd be happy to get them for you if you would like them.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I mean, I'm fine with the idea of adding personnel that we get an obvious payback on, and I'm not questioning that at all. I just like to see your caseload and your expected caseload growth in the history for the last couple of years.
Sure.
just to put it in context there.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And if you can make that available to the committee of the chair's approval, then that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, we'll provide that to Mr. Wilson and ask him to facilitate the distribution, if that's all right.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Yes, Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do the cost savings exceed the cost of enforcement?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, I can answer with certainty as to the portion of the I'm certain the answer to that question is yes. I don't know the number, however, because I'm not certain as to how the federal government accounts for the total cost of the personnel that they have committed to the program.
Mr. Chair, at least in terms of the information that's provided by the agency, the program folks, that in at least 2005, the federal government saved probably about $11.4 million and state programs saved approximately $8.2 million. And that doesn't represent the cost of the DOJ component of this program. So their costs are much less than the 2005 savings. The various levels.
The savings are significant.
Yeah.
That's
right. It appears that way.
Any additional gas recommendation?
Mr. Chair, Kelly Creels again. The request is for increasing the other fund expenditure limitation by $217,862 and establishment of one permanent position. As Mr. Shepard noted, these are actually federal funds coming to the state, but because they go through the Department of Department of Human Services, they come into DOJ as other funds, and we are recommending approval of the request.
We are also recommending the approval of the request.
Chair?
Yes.
I move we increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $217,862 and approve the establishment of one permanent full-time position, 0.83 FTE for the Cooperative Disability Investigation Program.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Seeing none, any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion passes. We will go on to the next agenda item, item number 26. And so for the sake of the audience, we'll go after that to the community college item and then to the item higher ed with the Portland State University. And then we'll go to the Capitol.
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, Pete Shepard, I'm the Deputy Attorney General, and again, I'm accompanied by Ms. Pellegrini and Mr. Friels. The Department of Justice requests that the Legislative Assembly increase other funds expenditure limitation by $12,168 for the purpose of establishing one permanent full-time chief criminal investigator position, which would be the bulk of which would be funded through the abolition of an existing permanent full-time position classified as an assistant chief criminal investigator. The existing position is designated an assistant chief criminal investigator. That individual currently is responsible for the management and oversight of 23 investigators and other staff in three related but independent programs: the Oregon Criminal Intelligence Unit, the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area Program, or HIDA, as you may have heard it referred to, and the Terrorism Intelligence Threat Assessment Network. This position also is responsible for providing direction and supervision to other non-DOJ workers in the HIDA program, other individuals who are provided by, for example, federal agencies that are our partners in that drug fighting program. Funding for this position reclassification, the total of $12,000 and change, will be from funds that the department receives as a result of our participation in the high-intensity drug trafficking program, in other words, federal funds. The administrative body for that program, which is a joint body composed of both federal prosecutors, state officials and investigators has approved the use of those funds for these purposes because of the return we believe it will bring in the program itself. The current chief investigator position would be the other chief investigator position that we have in the same part of the department would remain responsible for 17 investigators, and so the workload would be approximately the same for the two in terms of span of control. We ask the Assembly's approval of the proposal.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just want to say that without going into too much detail, there's a demonstrable need for this position, in my estimation and opinion, especially the age in which we live, having people dedicated to understanding the intelligence that we get and being able to ascertain it is critical in this age of terrorism that we live in. And in fact, I would hope that we have more e-board requests along this line for the future, and I would hope in the next legislative session that this body understands the depth of how serious this is and the need for these types of people to concentrate on these very specific areas. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just worry about shorting the federal government of needed funds because obviously they need the money quite badly too to have accurate information.
Are you referring to the CIA? Just curious.
just a comment.
You said it could apply to all the above, right? Is that
yes, sir.
Said?
Yes, sir. Sure.
The DAS recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kelly Fields again with BAM. We are recommending approval. The request is for an increase of other fund expenditure limitation of $12,168. We would recommend that the agency just reclassify the existing position upward rather than abolishing, establishing. That's more of a technical aspect, though, Mr. Chair.
Given what DAS just said, we'll go along with the DAS recommendation because it is technically easier to do.
Well, then I'll try and make a motion that obtains that by recommending the increase in other funds expenditure by $12,168 and approve the reclassification of this position changing the assistant chief criminal investigator into a chief criminal investigator. Is that close enough?
Any additional discussion? Are there any objections to the motion?
Hearing none, the motion passes.
Thank you.
Representative Kern, will you carry?
The honor.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Bender. We will go next to the community colleges item, item number 14. And then we'll come to back to higher ed.
Where's our coffee and drinks, Mr. Chair?
I thought you were going to pay for them. Forgive our... please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, Cam Preuss Bali, Commissioner at the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And with me is Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services. We're here to request an increase in expenditure limitation of other funds by $199,999 to support the costs of overseeing the community college capital construction projects that will be funded with Article 11G bonds as approved in Senate Bill 5514, Section 18. The requested amount will be added to the $1 placeholder that was approved in the legislatively adopted budget. And I can go into detail about what we have done to date, but perhaps I'll just leave it there and answer questions.
Any questions? I just wanted to say for the record that it's been my experience in public agency that one of the areas where you can get into the most trouble is not managing capital projects well. So I think if this money is spent reasonably, it will be very well spent. So... the DAS recommendation.
Mr. Chair, Bill McGee from Department of Administrative Services. We recommend you approve the request.
LFO recommendation.
LFO also recommends that you approve the request.
Yes. Just a quick comment. I appreciate this agency stepping forward and finding money in their budget, and they were hit significantly in this last budget cycle with our reduction, so I appreciate them coming forward and working hard to find money to do this, as I agree with the chair's admonition. And with that, I move we increase the other funds expenditure limitation established for the department by $199,999 for overseeing community college capital construction projects funded with Article 11G.
There's a motion on the table. Is there any additional discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing no objection, motion passes. We will go on to item number 12, Department of Higher Education, PSU. Carrier for 14. Senator Morse, will you carry 14?
Chairman Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Jay Kenton. I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance Administration with the Oregon University System. With me today is Dr. Lindsay DeRoche, the new Vice President for Finance Administration at Portland State University as of December. We are here to request that you establish a $525,000 Article 11F bond limitation and a $750,000 other funds limitation for the purchase and renovation of the property known as the Koinea House, which I will refer to as the K House for brevity. The K House property is located at 633 Southwest Montgomery Street in the heart of PSU's campus in downtown Portland, Oregon. All properties adjacent to this are owned by the university. I will introduce this item and then turn to Dr. DeRoche, who will provide additional details regarding the project. This project is one that's been in the works for a number of months, but due to the property being owned by seven religious denominations, it has been difficult to get all parties to agree on the sale terms and condition. It is my understanding that all parties have now agreed and given their endorsement for this sale. Thus, time is now of the essence to complete this transaction. The project has been reviewed and approved by the State Board of Higher Education at their January 6, 2006 meeting. I will now turn to Dr. DeRoche, who will speak to you about the need for this facility and its proposed uses.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Lindsay DeRoche, Vice President for Finance and Administration at Portland State, and thank you for the opportunity to come before you. I have a few remarks. I'll try to keep them brief and allow for question time. I'm here to present a proposal on the acquisition of what we call the K House. It's an essential element of the city block located right near the core of the campus, literally across the street from Smith Memorial Union and the Kramer Building on Broadway. It's a main thoroughfare through campus, as many of you know. The property is surrounded by Portland State property already owned, as you can see in this circle that's right in front of you. We own most of that block, and this one building we do not. Because of our rapid growth in enrollment over the last 10 years, Portland State's additional space needs to provide higher education opportunity for Portlanders and others in the state is increasingly difficult because of the space press. Space is currently and really into the foreseeable future at a great premium on our campus. So the K House would bring us 11,425 square feet, and of that, about 3,600 would continue to be rented for some time, leased to the Christian ministries and to others who are currently in the building for the foreseeable future. But that does leave us some space for classrooms that are much needed and some offices. The acquisition price is $1.15 million. We've had two appraisals as required. Our request is for spending authority of $1.250 million in order to do some minor repairs on the building that is part of the agreement with the Christian ministries. The purchase is supported by a $750,000 gift made to Portland State University specifically for this acquisition, which we're glad to have, and therefore it requires an other funds limitation from you to be able to spend for this purpose. And then we propose to use 11F1 bonds of $525,000 to complete the package and be able to acquire the property. The payback is supported by the rental incomes at this time, and I think with that I'll just close my remarks and open for any questions you may have.
One comment.
Yes, sir.
One, I did note that the sale price is lower than even the assessed value for the parcel, which is kind of a rarity.
Yeah.
And two, I'm glad that you referred to it as the K House, because I used to attend services there in 1972, and I could not pronounce the name of it then, and I can't pronounce the name of it now either.
Canonia.
Yeah. Any questions for... Seeing none, the DAS recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill McGee, Department of Administrative Services. We're recommending you approve the request with a technical modification that you establish a new other funds, Article 11F bonds, capital construction limitation. You transfer $525,000 from existing other funds, Article 11F bonds limitation, that was established during session for retail development in various locations by Portland State. And you establish a new other funds, other revenues, capital construction, expenditure limitation of $750,000 to be funded with the grant that would assume with the foundation.
LFO recommendation.
The LFO recommendation is identical to the DAS recommendation, and you see it written on our analysis page. I would like to make one change, though, in the wording from what is written there based on something that Mr. Kenton said that I think would be a good change, and that would be in the last sentence of the recommendation to, after the word purchase, add and renovation. So it would say for the purchase and renovation.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to recommend that we establish a new other funds capital construction, Article 11F bonds, expenditure limitation, transfer $525,000 other funds capital construction, Article 11F1 bonds, expenditure limitation from the expenditure limitation established for Portland State University retail development various locations to newly established expenditure limitation and establish a $750,000 other funds capital construction expenditure limitation for the purchase and renovation of the K House in Portland State University.
Senator Schrader, are you sure you got it all in there?
Well, pretty much, except for one little bracket thing that didn't seem really critical.
Okay. We have a motion on the table. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections to the motion? Hearing no objections, motion carries. I will carry to the full. And now we'll go to the final item on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We need the chancellor. Oh, there he is.
Switches to this chair.
I love the best to laugh.
Chairman Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, Jay Kenton, Vice Chancellor of Finance Administration, Oregon University System. As was directed by the budget note attached to the department's operating budget, I'm here today to report to you on projects that are being considered for Article 11G funding in the 07-09 biennium, or actually 07-13 because of our six-year capital budget horizon. As requested in your docket, you'll see a listing of capital projects that are being considered by the department for the 0709, 0911, and 1113 biennia. Please note that these are estimated project costs only at this time. We have not done detailed design and other work necessary to refine these numbers, plus with the volatility in the construction material market today, it's difficult to project costs beyond the current period. We realize the listing of projects that you have in front of you is significant. However, you must realize how important capital is to the department's ability to serve increasing numbers of students. Our student demand is estimated to grow by nearly 30,000 headcount students, 24,000 FTE over the next 20 years. Continuing to grow our capacity to compete with other states for quality students, faculty, and research funding, and providing facilities needed to enhance our public and community service programs. G-bonds have always been an important way of leveraging the state's resources by matching private, local, and federal resources for the betterment of Oregon. In addition, we believe that these projects are good for the overall Oregon economy as well as for providing important jobs in the local communities where these projects will be constructed. Although this project listing was reviewed with the State Board of Higher Education at their November 4, 2005 meeting, it is important to note that this listing of projects has not been prioritized by the State Board of Higher Education or the Governor at this time. Furthermore, projects will continue to be developed and reprioritized by campuses based in part on donor support. As part of our biennial budget formulation process, all capital projects to be considered for inclusion in our biennial capital budget will be reviewed and prioritized by the State Board of Higher Education in the coming months. I expect the OUS board will begin the process of reviewing each project request for inclusion in the 0709 capital budget sometime in the summer of 2006. This process will culminate in a capital budget request that is submitted to the governor in September 2006. At that point, the governor will review this request and formulate his capital budget recommendations for legislative consideration in December 2006. You will note that gifts have already been received for four projects on that list, including the OIT Center for Health Professions, Phase 2, which I mentioned earlier, $4 million, the U of O Integrative Science Complex, Phase 2, $10 million, U of O Condon Hall Expansion and Alterations, $1 million, and WOU Humanities and Social Science Remodel, $1 million. In addition, it is my understanding that Eastern Oregon University, working in conjunction with the City of Hermiston, are in the process of applying for federal grants to support the development of the Hermiston Center, and that Oregon State University is preparing to launch a major capital campaign that will highlight many of the projects on this list. The department expects to continue to submit projects for capital repair and deferred maintenance, as has been done in the past. Estimates for these types of projects are included in your reports under the system-wide project caption. In the interest of time, I will not go through each project on this list. Most campuses are represented in this room today, and we would be happy to try to address any project-specific questions you may have. At this point, I will stop and ask if you have any questions regarding this report.
Any questions from the committees?
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Yes.
It's appropriate time.
This might be an appropriate time to start. Could the chancellor come forward also? Because there may be some questions for the chancellor also. So just to make him available. Senator Schrader.
Thank you. I guess the first question is actually for LFO. How many new buildings did we approve last session for our Article 11G bonds? Offhand.
I don't remember offhand. I believe it was six, but I may be wrong.
I was thinking four, but six is probably more accurate.
Three at the University of Oregon. One of them was the renovation and expansion of the education building. Another was the renovation and expansion of the theater, and the other was the renovation of, and now I'm blanking, business.
The theater had been in process for, I believe,
A bunch of years.
Yeah, actually, before that. The theater had been in process since about 1995. The original phase of the business actually predates that. And the education one was a little later than that when it first came forward.
So I guess
Yes, and there was also a project at Southern Oregon University for a center in Medford, and there was an animal sciences building at Oregon State. That adds to five. Five.
Well, and the other major project at Oregon State was not a G bond.
Right. I guess, if I may, Mr. Chair, the reason I bring that out is that's five or six projects. We have a list here of nearly 100 projects for the next three bienniums. So I want to make it very clear to the university system that it's, not going to happen, and that they'll probably pare this list down significantly. My guess is there'll be, five or six projects that would get approved at the next legislative session. I want to this is an excellent list, and certainly it's I assume, semi-exhaustive list. Certainly from Oregon State, it's a very exhaustive list. They must have had a lot of fun doing this, and I appreciate that opportunity. I like to create opportunities for fun here occasionally. However, from my perspective, I'd be interested in the rest of the committee's response, but there's a pretty clear equation in our budget-limited environment in the state of Oregon right now. And we've talked about this particularly with the community colleges last session, that you can either build buildings or you can have operational funds to work in those buildings. And I look forward to staff's comments on the state paid bonds anticipated if all these buildings were to be built in the near future. So I just don't want anyone to get the impression that, this is a good report and it's interesting. I appreciated Jay's comments that, there's four, maybe five projects that are looking for donors. or that have donors already kicking in. So I'm going to have to assume at this point, the way I would interpret this would be, okay, those are the current priorities. You know, there may be some new ones come on. If a fancy, you know, a new health sciences thing becomes available, that might rise to the top of one of the lists. But we have to be, I think, as we go into this, the budget note said 2009. I think the point there was to give you guys time to kind of ramp up and figure out, okay, which donors, where are we going to be trying to go? Long-winded statement, I guess. My interest here, Mr. Chair, is to actually have a second report in September of 06, where we get some criteria by which the university system is going to narrow down their request, certainly for the 07-09 biennium, so that the legislature as well as the governor, so they're going to be giving the report to the governor anyway, so its timing should be okay. And the idea would be that we're on notice, too, about where they're going to be going, and then certainly decisions going to be made at the legislature. This is a Ways and Means thing on the board decision process. But I want to get everyone in the habit that we know what the game plan is going in. We don't want donors disgruntled because the legislature doesn't pony up their half of the money. We're going to have to prioritize, and I just think it's very, very important to get a very clear idea of what's going on.
Senator Schrader, are you okay if I come in at this point?
Please, sir. Stop me from talking.
Just so that the people that are here from higher ed know, and so that the other members here know, and I think both the other members here have as much interest as Senator Schrader and I, but Senator Schrader and I probably spend more time discussing capital projects at universities and community colleges than has been spent in any committee in this building discussing capital projects at higher ed and community college, and we have some different views. I think I would say one of those ways to express it is I think Senator Schrader has a view of the future of higher education, but is concerned about being able to operate for the current, for the be able to have resources for our current needs. I'm concerned about our current needs, but I'm also very concerned about the future. And so we have constant debates about capital projects and whether or not they are necessary or not. And I would anticipate, because I know that what you're putting forward is all the projects that are on the table, and I would anticipate, as has been in the past, that the Board of Higher Education will narrow that, and the governor may narrow that even more. And so we will not see this many projects coming forward. One of the concerns I do have, though, is we've went from a system where the general fund contribution to this came from the general fund to a system where half the funds come from donations.
That's true.
I don't know what the current figures are, but I might ask the chancellor, actually not right now, but in this report in September, to identify how much money has come over the last 10 years or approximately since we've been doing this in private donations, which in a sense is a public-private partnership, which is something we've all been talking about. I don't want to get into a system where we actually deter people from making major donations to our university system. Some of these projects that I've seen in the past, some of them have been in the works for 6 years, 8 years, and I think universities are putting in interesting circumstances too when you get, if you have a donor, particularly if you have a donor that is deciding where to give most of his or her estate while they're still alive and they want to give you $20 million and this might be your number two priority, not your number one priority, but if you don't say yes to the donor, they may go away with the $20 million to somewhere else. They may decide to go to the graduate school where they graduated rather than the undergraduate school, or vice versa. I don't want to put so many constraints on this that we actually diminish the amount of private money that's coming in that I think is very beneficial in the long term to the system. So we could have this debate all day long.
We do. Everything you said, Mr. Chair.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The policy that was directed in the budget note, I would appreciate clarification. Is that intended to require the universities to come through the state board before they start soliciting funds, donated funds, or to come back to this body through the next budget session before they start soliciting funds?
I think that's probably open.
and Senator Schrader and I would get into probably in a disagreement on this.
Budget
note is an intent of the legislature. Obviously, the legislature indicated its intent. It'll obviously be a subject of discussion. It does not have the authority of law as a budget note, and I'm sure that it'll be an item of discussion between the legislature and the executive branch in the next session. Mr. Bender, do you want to get into this?
Well, the budget note does have a direction to the department that they are not to solicit or accept donations for projects that would require an Article 11G match to complete prior to getting authorization by the legislature for the use of Article 11G bonds for that project.
Clarification in that, that's for 2009 and
correct,
forward.
Correct, 2009. Yeah. That's the direction beginning in 2009. The only way the legislature can give that type of authority is through a capital construction bill during a session. It's not something the emergency board, for example, could do, or the State Board of Higher Ed could do.
Well, I would suggest, Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, that there needs to be some really thoughtful discussion so that we integrate our policy with the things that work in fundraising capital campaigns. Because if we discourage donors by effect of our policy, I'm not sure that's in our interest either. But on the other hand, there needs to be some boundaries.
Fair, I think one of the concerns that was expressed during discussions in the last session was we fortunately or unfortunately haven't had one like this, but somebody comes in and wants the greatest science or engineering building imaginable and donates $100 million, but they want a $200 million building. Are we on the hook for the other $100 million is the question. Fortunately or unfortunately, we haven't had anybody come in with $100 million.
Mr. Chairman, I would echo Senator Morse's comments. I feel very much the same way. I think we need to have a thoughtful discussion in the future. And the last thing I would want to see is a discouragement of private fundraising efforts. I'm a strong supporter in seeing that happen at this level. I think there's tremendous benefits and buy-in from individuals who see the worth of a project and give their money to that. There's a lot of benefits to the university in the ensuing years. And I would hate to have us have a policy that discourages that in some way. So I very much agree with Senator Morris. I think we need to have a very thoughtful discussion on this in the coming years.
Anything additional from DAS? Do you have a recommendation?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Bill McGee from DAS. We recommend you accept the report. I want to clarify the recommendation is not a recommendation to move forward with any particular project, and won't commit the governor to put any of these projects in his or her budget for the next session.
I did want to put one thing on the record, too. During the session, I was concerned, and I don't want to say anything here that concerns the big three, PSU, OSU, and U of O. But I was concerned about the ability of the regionals to actually be able to participate in how we set this up because of this expectation that half of it's going to come from donors. I think the regionals in the last few years have shown quite a bit of effort and actually have had some considerable success. But I'm still a little bit worried, and because I think that the regional universities are important to the state in the long term, and they have their own set of capital needs. That we look at this system some way that they somehow don't get shorted in this system, because I think it's important, particularly that we keep a vital regional system of colleges in the state in addition to the big three. And when I have my Division I football team in Portland,
hopefully you didn't say baseball.
LFO recommendation.
LFO is also recommending that you acknowledge receipt of the report without recommendation on the capital construction projects contained therein, This report is, of course, in response to a budget note directive that this information be provided. LFO believes that the report does show that there's a significant and very large effort on the parts of the campuses to raise funds or to potentially raise funds for projects that would require Article 11 GMATCH in order to be completed, and that this indicates or shows the reasoning behind the legislature's implementation of the budget note in the first place to allow the legislature to prioritize and establish the bond funding levels without risking situations where donors may find out only after they've made a commitment that the bonds that they were expecting would not be available.
Yes, Senator Schrader.
Could I get LFO to comment on their chart on page 2 of our analysis? It's a state paid bond for U.S. capital construction over time. I think that's something that I'd like to get on the record, if that's okay. Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Schrader, this chart does show historically the amount of what I'm calling state paid bonds in the OUS capital construction budget for the current biennium and the three prior biennia. This isn't including everything because this small energy loan program bonds, the debt service is split, so I excluded those, but this would primarily include the general fund, the Article 11 G bonds, and the lottery bonds. These are the ones for which the state is committed to paying debt service out of its general fund or lottery fund budgets. And as you can see, the levels that were approved there, the amount that was approved in 05-07 of $79.4 million is projected to result in debt service costs, general fund and lottery fund of approximately $14.3 million per biennium when those bonds are all sold. The amount that is included for all of the projects listed for 07-09 of these types of bonds that would be for which the debt service would become an obligation of the state budget totals $370.8 million. In this analysis, we note this and we stress this somewhat. We don't really expect the request that would come to you from the governor to be this large, but this does indicate the scope of the activity out there in terms of which projects are considered important by the campuses themselves. If all of those projects were approved, the debt service would be about $55.2 million. That's, of course, an estimate. It wouldn't be exactly that. But given the interest rates that we're projecting, it would be about $55.2 million per biennium. So this would entail a significant commitment on the part of the state if all of these were to be reached.
One other thing for the record, too. I think part of your report, in terms of going away from the G-bonds, but the seismic, there is no identified source at this point for if we ever issued seismic on how they would be.
That's correct. There's no non-state source that would be.
Yep. The other thing I'd point out, Mr. Chair, if I may, is that on that graph, it was my recollection that in 2001-03 was kind of the highest amount of bonding we did for capital construction for universities. I think that was
2001-03.
Yeah.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
So I just counsel here. As I said, I mean, I think it's fine. Buildings are excellent. I like to have a very pretty campus with lots of new buildings that are going to help house students. But I'm mostly concerned right now. The university system is under siege, and it's under siege from an operational standpoint. And it's not just in this state, but it's every state in this country right now, where tuition goes up and state support goes down. And I'm very, very concerned that we're disinvesting in higher education in terms of the quality and the opportunities there. The faculty is really feeling the pinch. I'm very sympathetic to them at this point. And I would much prefer this body re-engage its thinking in terms of where our limited resources need to go. I would prefer to increase higher education funding. Oops. Good thing it's not Jackie Winters, I'd be in big trouble. that we have to make a real serious investment. I'd like to see us increase the percentage of money going to higher education this next legislative session. And it won't happen if we build a tremendous number of new buildings. There are certainly critical buildings. I'm not saying no capital construction, don't get me wrong. And certainly we want to not discourage private investment here at the university system, because, frankly, we're a pittance compared to some of the private investors in terms of funding university systems. I think it's a sad comment. But I really think anyone on Ways and Means next session needs to be thinking about this, because a lot of people in the policy committees don't get it, and it's going to be very important for those that are Ways and Means members to stand up and make those tough choices between funding students and operations versus the buildings.
Senator Morrison, then I'll counter Senator Schrader.
Oh, no.
No, go ahead.
You want more time to think about what you're going to say?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for our Chancellor, if he has the information on the top of his head, or generally. In light of this discussion, how does Oregon benchmark to the other states in the nation with respect to state support, either per capita of population, per capita student, or whatever index that you use? If you might make a comment to put it in the perspective of how do we rank vis-a-vis our other states or peer institutions.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, thank you. As we discussed in the Ways and Means Committee in the last session, 9th or 50th in state spending per student in the country at that time, I think that what the legislature was able to do in this last session will bring us up a few notches in that ranking table. So I think we won't be at that very bottom rung any longer, for which we're very appreciative. In terms of capital, I haven't done the comparison in a number of years. There was a time in the 90s when we were the only state that where we were last. But I don't think that's true any longer either. So, but I don't know capital anymore. But in the operating side, we are certainly in the probably in the bottom half dozen right now.
Thank you. And it's important. I think we also need in future sessions to keep in mind where we are and how that lack of support has degraded. It is a competitive world, and I, with three other legislators that serve on the Oregon Inc., the Oregon Innovation Council, and a major component of that, obviously, is what generates out of our universities. And so we have some failings that we need to address and do it thoughtfully. We're not where we need to be.
One aspect that I wanted to point out is that in the last legislative session, I believe that for the first time in a long time, we did not allow the deferred maintenance backlog to grow any farther. We didn't really make much headway, but we didn't allow it to grow much farther. And we all know that we have a number of buildings, and see, I'll get kudos for this, like Lincoln Hall at PSU. that if you don't do the renovation of it in the next 4 or 6 years, you might as well just replace it. And we have a number of facilities that are like that in the state system. One thing I might ask for, too, and I know this is a very hard thing to do and it's very subjective, is if the Department of Higher Ed could look at some representative systems in different states in terms of seeing what kinds of investments they're making, both in maintaining their existing physical plant and in expansion, and where those investments are coming from.
In terms of the funding sources?
Yes. So I think, I mean, we're going to have this discussion probably from September when the report comes back through September when the session ends, right?
I suspect so, sir.
and I did mention to Senator Schrader, I'm being too bad today, actually, is that I mentioned it would be much easier to address these on a periodic basis if we had annual sessions.
Now they're really nervous, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Short annual sessions. Let me give that.
Constitutionally limited,
yes.
Senator.
Yes.
Anything additional, Mr. Bender?
No, sir.
We need to actually accept the report.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to move we acknowledge receipt of the report of the capital construction bond projects involving potentially Article 11G bonds without recommendation to the extent of the capital projects.
Okay. Any discussion?
Question by LFO.
I just may I ask a clarification?
Yes.
There's been some discussion of a returning report. Is that part of the motion or not?
I think so. An expectation there'll be a returning report, including both the items that Senator Schrader identified and the items I identified and any other items identified during this discussion.
There's an open door for you.
Mr. Chair, may I just ask the Chancellor a quick question? Will this fit with your schedule of getting a capital construction request to the governor through your board?
Mr. Bender, the Board of Higher Ed will adopt its capital construction request in July.
Okay.
I don't know when the September e-board is, therefore I don't know your deadline date, so...
It should be okay.
Yeah, so that's the only...
Hey, there's a motion on the table. Is there any additional discussion? Are there any objections to the motion? Hearing no objections, the motion passes. I will carry the item.
Good job, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, you may have to follow the record today for the most expeditious.
We're done. Oh, I need to check next time.